This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined once again by our good friend Brendan.
I'm back.
He's here, everybody. And we have four games with the Cincinnati Reds to break down. The Cubs do win three of four games. And you know, Brendan, that first game on Saturday was a rainout makeup. We could kind of just pretend that didn't happen. And then it's basically just a three-game sweep.
I think we can do that, right? I mean,
if everybody's in agreement on that,
they technically won three straight days here, Corey.
So, yeah, forget it. That game didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Whatever about the first game on Saturday. But we will break down all four games of the Cincinnati Reds series, and then we will look forward to the pair of games with the visiting Cleveland Indians, who return to Wrigley Field for the first time. Brendan, I don't know if you remember this, since Game 5 of the 2016 World Series, which the Cubs did win, and then they would go on to win the next two games and win the World Series.
People forget
in 2016.
That. Yeah, the Cubs won the World Series.
People tend to forget that, and I, you know, just with the Indians coming to town, it sort of jogs your memory on that.
I know a lot of us
don't think about that all the time, literally every day, but it's nice for the Indians to help remind us of that. But let's start with these games against the Cincinnati Reds on Friday. More rain for John Lester. I don't know why John Lester keeps having to wait like an extra hour or two before his starts. In I think like the last like three starts, there's been tarp pulling and all that stuff for John Lester. But John being John, he comes out and delivers an excellent start. Six innings of one-run ball, one walk, eight strikeouts, and only two hits allowed. John was great. The Cubs winning this one 8-1. Rizzo, Contreras, Russell, Baez, Schwarber, Baez again, Rizzo again, and John Lester on another beautiful. This one was a safety squeeze, but come on, Brendan, is that not the prettiest play in baseball? John Lester bunting and runs, and he's, you know, a professional at it at this point. It's at least like the third or fourth time we've seen him do it. So pretty simple story on that one. The Cubs get to see their old friend Homer Bailey, and they win 8-1. That's pretty much how we were all hoping that game was going to go. The first game on Saturday, Joe Maddon basically called it the worst game he has managed as the manager of the Chicago Cubs. And I would say that most fans, including Brendan and myself, don't disagree with that one. This was a real mess. All of the kind of early season issues and sloppiness and all sort of rolled into one beautiful, horrible ball. The Cubs were 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position in this game, which I believe I saw a stat tweeted out is the worst of any Major League Baseball team in the 2018 season with runners in scoring position. So
lovely.
Congratulate. That's a feat. Yes, you get to put that one in the record book. But the Reds win this one 5-4. They win on a walk-off walk. Justin Wilson walking Billy Hamilton, which is a truly atrocious sentence, Brendan, for any number of reasons. But Wilson comes in the 11th, walks three batters, including walking in the winning run. Hendricks giving up three runs in five innings of work with six strikeouts. The Cubs getting their runs. Ian Happ homering in this one. Chris Bryant driving in a run with a double. Kyle Hendricks doing his best to pace the offense in this one with an RBI double.
He has a good hack there, too. I was impressed by that.
You know, every
he's
now
been
and
working
again,
on
Kyle
it.
Can stroke one. Yeah,
him and Lester.
I think he's getting jealous of Lester ripping the ball all the time. Anthony Rizzo ties this one up late in the top of the eighth with a double, scoring Tommy La Stella. But again, we would go to extras, and the Reds would win on a walk-off walk. But forgetting that game, going into Saturday night, the real game on Saturday, the real honest game that really counts. The Cubs win this one 10-0 behind the arm of Jose Quintana, who delivers an excellent start in this one. Seven innings of one-hit baseball. Four walks, though, but seven strikeouts all around. He looked phenomenal. The Cubs getting another homer from Ian Happ in this in this game. Ian Happ homering from both sides of the plate in this series. The other runs coming from Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Jason Hayward getting a quote-unquote triple. You know, you can score that one however you want, but
triple probability 0.1%.
Yeah, it was a pop-up that just was not played very well, but hey, it's a triple in the scoreboard.
Yeah, it counts.
Jason Hayward also with a sacrifice fly. Rizzo a sacrifice fly. Albert Almora Jr. doubling. 10-0, really simple in that one. And Sunday was more of the same. The Cubs come out. They fall behind early. Yu Darvish struggled in that first inning, but he did settle down very nicely to pick up his first win as a Chicago Cubs. Only allows two hits on the day, six innings pitched, one earned run, three walks, and seven strikeouts. The Cubs' runs in this one coming on back-to-back home runs from Kyle Schwarber and Javi Baez. Kyle Schwarber with another one of those piss rocket home runs that a guy in the stands, Brendan, caught with his bare hands. And I was like,
you can't be. Yeah, that's just dumb to do.
He looked fine, but I mean, this was one of those Schwarber, like, this ball is in the stands in like a second and a half.
I guarantee you his hand is black and blue right now.
I was like, wow, dude.
Dumb.
I assume he's maybe icing those hands tonight. But either way, Schwarber and Baez go back to back. Really cute, I guess I would say. Reaction in the dugout. A nice embrace, a hug embrace between Baez and Schwarber that Cubs Twitter was kind enough to gift for us. And
later on, Javi would return the favor and hug.
In the outfield, yes.
And he would hug Schwarber back from the umpire after he was just ridiculously ejected for an atrocious call. Did you see that one, Corey?
There was the pop-up in the outfield that I think Baez caught, and as he was... Yep. Backpedaling, Schwarber caught him and bear hugged him. Anyway, we could do a whole podcast about how cute the Cubs are. I'm not really sure we have the demographic for that, but you know, we could do it.
One of these days.
Ben Zobrist also homering in this game. He continues to play very well. And then in the top of the seventh, Albert Almora and Anthony Rizzo driving in a couple more runs. 6-1 your final. The Cubs, again, Darvish picking up his first win in a Cubs uniform. Strope, Edwards, Morrow, close the door. That's the deal. A lovely formula when it works. And so, again, the Cubs take 3 of 4 in this game, so Brendan, or in this series with Cincinnati. So, Brendan, I will throw it to you. General thoughts on the series, and then I guess we'll just get it going with your player of the series here.
Before we get into breaking down this series, this podcast is also presented by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you there closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I always use SeatGeek to buy my tickets. I really do, guys. It's easy. You just download it on your phone. It takes me like 2 minutes to do this. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time, money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals, and to get the most bang for your buck, and creates every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals in every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners, you guys, get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app on your phone, enter promo code CUBSRELATED today. That's promo code CUBSRELATED for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That Saturday first game of the doubleheader was infuriating.
Yes.
I mean...
Yes, a terrible game.
All around. I guess my takeaway, though...
I think
though,
a good example of, you know, the sloppiness still there in a lot of respects. There was a number of things. I know you were reading, I think, a quote that kind of listed them all off, but it was almost every player kind of did something in that game that was kind of like, guys, we really need to clean this up.
Right, and I guess I can just kind of just, you know, remember and joggle everyone's memories here, but essentially what happened was... Rizzo did not slide into the second base. Ended up being a costly miscalculation on Rizzo's part that would have, if he were safe, got a run home. We have Addison Russell just dumb base running early on in the game. We have Javi Baez, who hit, to his credit, a rocket up the middle, a grounder straight into the shift to Scooter Gennett, and he ended up not running down the line, Javi Baez. He ran about 25. He respected maybe 25.
Yeah.
So just knock it all
around.
Correct
me if I'm wrong, Brendan. That is not the saying. That is not what's on Joe Madden's t-shirt.
I mean, we haven't seen the t-shirts yet. Yeah, maybe next year. And then
respecting 90, right?
And then Justin Wilson just, like, I don't know if we're reaching a tipping point yet with Justin Wilson because it is late May, but it is just not an enjoyable experience to watch Justin Wilson.
Yeah.
And here's the frustrating part, Corey, is, like, Evan and I were talking about this, and my last podcast before I missed last week, I mentioned, like, hey, Justin Wilson is encouraging. He hasn't walked a batter in his last 8 outings. It almost was, like, what, 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
He comes out and completely reverts. And so I don't understand that whatsoever. I'm not a professional athlete or a professional pitcher. I have no idea what is going on in Justin Wilson's head, but that's just disappointing. And we saw Randy Rosario really look promising, and he's a young guy, lefty, throws in the upper 90s. He in 17 innings this year, Rosario has a 0.52 ERA with Iowa. So again, it's early. I'm not saying, oh, bring up Randy Rosario and get rid of Justin Wilson, but it is an interesting contrast to see those two side by side. Regardless, though, the overall series I do think is encouraging. I think it's nice, especially in that last game, to see Javi kind of rebound immediately after his maybe his worst game as a Cub, to be honest with you.
Right. Well, and coming on the heels of his worst stretch of the season.
Exactly.
Earlier this week.
Exactly. And we know the thing with Javi, and he was kind of jawing with, I believe, forgetting the pitcher's name. I want to say it's Garrett.
Amir Garrett.
There it is. So having Javi come back. By the way, that I saw a lot of takes about that. Garrett, like, made eye contact. And
Javi explained this really clearly,
yeah.
And I'm not really sure what people love to rag on the Cubs and act like that. Javi articulated this very clearly. It was Rizzo articulating this on behalf of Javi. And basically what Rizzo said was, we of all people, meaning the Chicago Cubs, are not going to tell anybody not to celebrate. We have plenty of guys on this team that love to celebrate, that are demonstrative and boisterous on this field. However, do not direct it at us.
This is a complete difference.
And if you watch the replay, Amir Garrett is staring at Javi Baez, who isn't doing anything. He struck out. He's taking off his helmet, taking off his batting gloves. He's going to stand there and wait until somebody brings out his glove. Garrett is looking right at him and walking off the mound. Now, I will say, I don't love this whole situation, right? Because especially with the general start from the Cubs, I guess, and that Saturday game was just like, why don't we win a game? Like,
you can understand it, though. Like, Javi is struggling.
I'm not big on the chest puffing and any of this nonsense, right?
Yeah.
But I think Rizzo was dead on. Like, the Cubs celebrate and are open to that as much as anybody, and we've seen plenty of instances from other teams where they do it as well against the Cubs, and nobody's doing anything about it. I mean, even just recently, Colton Wong and Dexter Fowler hitting walk-offs home runs. They're celebrating. They're smiling. They're yelling. Colton Wong's trash-talking after. You don't hear anything from the Cubs. It's fine.
Yeah.
But that was Rizzo's point. Do it to your team, to your fans. But when you turn to our dugout and our players, different issue, right?
Dude, when Rizzo came sprinting out of that dugout.
Rizzo does not like the Reds.
I love it.
I don't think Rizzo cares for the Cincinnati
Reds. I think that may have been the fastest Rizzo has ever sprinted in his entire
life.
When
Almora was heated, too, which is not something we normally see. Wilson was the one holding Almora back in this one, so Wilson Contreras.
Remember that one time? I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but before we get into more of the series, remember that one time Big Z came out of the dugout with his belt off during it?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know why I thought about that. I need to find that video. But anyway, back to this weekend series. I think Baez rebounding and Schwarber having a great Sunday game was encouraging. And especially Yu Darvish. And we'll get into the pitching as a whole, but just briefly, Yu Darvish looked much better, settled down after that rough first inning. Could have been a disaster. So that was good. My player of the series here, though, Corey, Ian Happ. What a turnaround. Yes. And to his credit, this is a 180 complete 180. He successfully adapted. I don't know what he and Shelly Davis are doing, but there are a lot of critics saying, hey, you know, maybe Ian Happ needs to go back to Iowa. I mean, even we juggled the idea around just because he looks so lost, so right. lost. And it's a good example. Maybe when we go through these struggles again in the future, which it will happen, like there's a reason why these players are still at the major league level to work with the major league hitting coaches. So this is a good example. It's a good reminder. Ian Happ, he has 20 plate appearances. He walks 9 times, Corey. 5 of those were intentionally walked, granted. Nevertheless, it's a byproduct of his...
Which is interesting. I mean, even, you know, I know where he was hitting in the lineup, but that's an interesting place to end up with, you know, the stretches that we saw from him earlier in the year. It's interesting to end up in a series where another team is basically, we're not
pitching
this guy.
He's like Bryce Harper Jr. over here. It's like ridiculous. And so he walks 9 times. I'll briefly run through this. 5 hits, 2 doubles, 1 triple, 2 home runs. He was a single shy of the cycle in that first game of the doubleheader. You know, granted, he struck out a few times, so that part has not escaped him. But overall, like, Corey, this is great to see. And I think I'm genuinely surprised he was able to turn a switch like this just because he looks so lost, like one of the most lost players I've seen in a recent memory in a Cubs uniform.
Yeah, and it's these series that remind you of why the Cubs stick with him. And I think even when, you know, you and I were toying with that idea, it was really only because it was like, I don't know what else to do.
it was bad.
Right? Like, I do not know what other... Because I think even, you know, we've always said that the key is he has to adjust against major league pitching. But it did get to a point where it was like, I just don't know what you're going to do with this guy if he's going to strike out 4 times a game. But credit to him for sticking through it. Credit to him for obviously sticking through the increased scrutiny, but it's series like this that remind you of why he's such a highly touted player. And coming up, he was such a highly touted player that he can hit this way from both sides of the plate. He's playing several different positions. I think he might have played every outfield position in this series. I think he played third base.
Started at third base, yeah,
in lieu of Chris Bryant. So, you know, that's why, and that's also why it was such a delicate conversation at the time, because as we, you know, you and I kept repeating, like, this guy's 24 years old.
23, like, 23, Corey.
Right.
Yeah, crazy.
This is not something you want to screw up. You know, you got to be really careful with what you do, you know, from a mental perspective with this guy, because this is his first full year. He's been willing to take on any number of projects and, you know, sort of versatility things with this team. Like, you gotta make, you know, you want to make sure that you're not
overwhelming the kid,
messing him up, right, or anything like that. Yeah, or, you know, if you do, you know, if they had sent him down, like, what was that going to do for him mentally? Or if they bench him at the major league level and, you know, Almora's just playing every day and that's it, you know, how does that affect him? So this is a really good series to see. And you know, again, one of those examples of, it's the Reds, for sure. Nobody's denying that.
Who just swept the Los Angeles Dodgers, need I remind you, Corey?
I don't know if that's a feat anymore or not, but...
still enjoyable, though.
Brendan and I we host a separate podcast just about Dodgers hate. It's a much more angry and, you know, vitriolic podcast.
But, explicit, too.
Yeah, so I know it's the Reds, but you gotta win these games, and regardless, this is one of those series where... You know, I think the people like us who are constantly, you know, take it, you know, there's a lot of time left. The talent on this team will win out. You know, this is why. Again, of course, it's the Reds. Like, they're facing Homer Bailey on Friday. I'm pretty sure Brendan and I could go out there and we might touch up Homer Bailey.
I mean, I would. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I wouldn't. But this talent is going, you're going to have, because, you know, you look, if you exclude, which obviously you cannot, and, you know, Madden made reference to how bad the game was, but, you know, they went 8-1 on Friday night, 10-0 in the Saturday night game, 6-1 in the Sunday game. Like, that's a lot of runs scored and very few runs allowed. And that's, again, it's the Reds, but that's what you expect from this team more often than not. And when they start, you know, when they play the better competition, that will improve as well, even from where we've seen it thus far. And again, you know, as a casual reminder, the Cubs are 6 games over 500. So, you know, everybody talks about the slow start. Like, they still have a good record. So, like, you know, not to freak out too much. But this series, I think, was a good example of, like, the talent on this team is very strong. There's just going to be stretches where they're just better than these teams. And so it was just good to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And then I want to just mention this too, it's on my mind and I keep looking at these heat maps, but Jose Quintana, guys, incredible start, this absolutely vintage Jose Quintana, and I'll throw it to you before for your player of the game here, Corey, but just, it's on my mind. Quintana looked phenomenal, and I was looking at the heat map, like I said, and I wrote about this on CubsInsider.com about Quintana's overall command, how it's really tilted up towards the middle of the plate. That last start against the Reds, everything was down, and he was hitting all the spots, the confidence, you can just tell the body language. He was feeling it, Corey, and to see him, followed by Darvish, come back out there was a huge, huge mental boost, I think, for the team. It was a huge mental boost for me as a fan. I was freaking out about Quintana. Hopefully this continues, but if he can get that command back in track here, oh my God, thank God here, Corey.
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost like the Cubs traded for him because he's a good pitcher.
It's crazy, right?
It's crazy that Theo, you know, would do something like that, trading for a guy who's been near the top of the league in terms of starting pitching for like 5 years. But yeah, it's almost like that's why they did that.
Mm.
So I'll read my player of the series and my trend of the series are kind of going to lump into one here.
Okay.
And kind of, I think, feed off of that conversation that you were just starting there with Quintana and Darvish a little bit. So maybe we can just sort of keep delving into that here. But my trend of the series was just going to be the starting pitching. Obviously, again, Hendricks in the Saturday day game was, you know, not the result you're hoping for. But in general, I think to get 6 innings from Lester, you get 7 innings from Quintana and 6 innings from Darvish with, you know, one earned run being the highest total, Lester and Darvish each giving up one, Quintana giving up none. Just that was the trend we've all been waiting for, right? Just mm-hmm. to see this group finally coming together. And I think, what did the three of them allow? 4 hits between them?
If that, I don't remember any
five
of the hits.
Excuse me. Lester and Darvish 2, Quintana 1. Yeah. 5 hits between them in the series, 2 earned runs, and a nice K to walk ratio, even though Darvish and Quintana a little higher than you'd like, but still. So I think that was the trend that you were looking for. You know, and Hendricks has been pretty good all year, so, it, you know, that start was whatever. But just nice to have a series where you maybe like a little more length, right? But still, when you're able to get quality starts from 3 of the 4 guys in this series, just with the way it's been inconsistent up until this point, that was just really nice to see. And I'm going to stick totally on my brand here and just say that John Lester was my player of the series.
You're such a homer.
I'm absolutely a John Lester homer. You could put that on my gravestone when I die. But I just thought that for him to, especially coming off of that Atlanta series where, you know, obviously an underwhelming series overall and not the result in those 3 games that you were hoping for. But again, for John Lester to deal with rain, have his start pushed back, the timing is off, the conditions are not great, and he just starts his series, he paces everybody exactly like you'd like him to. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts.
Love it.
On 99 pitches. You know, so if this were later in the year, you probably could have thrown him back out there for a 7th inning, and he, you know, would have continued to dominate. So I just... There was a lot to like in this series, obviously, when they're scoring that many runs and the pitching staff on the whole is doing a really nice job of keeping the run totals down. This is one of those where there was probably several guys you would have picked. I think Rizzo was another option. He drove in a lot of runs in this series, some winning runs, late inning runs to, you know, and even the game on Saturday. He's the one that ties it and sends us to extras. So you certainly could have went with him, and it's good to see him getting those numbers up. But this is just what you wanted from Lester. And, you know, with how much has been made about the bullpen usage being so high and the starting pitching, you know, not really living up to the expectations that we all had for it. Nothing I love more than, especially with a 4-game set, when John Lester comes out, he sets the pace, gets you the easy W, and the offense is scoring plenty of runs for him. And it's just a simple game. Those are my favorite games that the Cubs play, you know, obviously since John got here, just the ones where John is doing his thing. The talent on the offense overrides the opposing staff eventually, and it's just easy. It's easy peasy. Cubs win. Not much to think about. So he was my player of the series.
You know what's interesting about John this year, actually? His pace.
Everything.
His hit. So you mentioned the word pace. His pace right now is the fastest of his career. Like, he's pitching...
Like delivery to home plate?
Like time between pitches. So yeah. 2016, 23 and a half seconds
he's
in between
sick of
pitches.
People stealing on him.
Maybe I don't know what it is, but this year is 21 and a half. He's throwing the ball 2 seconds back. That's a big deal, guys. 2 seconds is a big deal on average. So I don't know what to make of that. That's not like Mark Burley-esque.
I wonder if, you know, with
but...
all this like with all this pitch clock stuff, he was just like, "Look, if an umpire tells me to hurry up, it's going to drive me nuts. So I better I'm just going to start going quicker on my own because I am not going to be told to hurry up." Yeah. An umpire. I think that goes right into my trend. And, you know, you were already talking about it with Quintana, and we can dive into the Darvish thing a little bit more, too. But it's just good to see this staff have a good weekend on the whole. You know, and the numbers for Hendricks weren't terrible, certainly. And I thought that, you know, he only threw 71 pitches in the 5 innings. And, you know, they... I think get Rosario in there to, you know, pitch out of a jam, and it is what it is.
That was
but it
weird,
wasn't,
though.
You know, it wasn't Hendricks's worst starter.
But
know,
like
by
71
any
pitches,
means, so.
Like that is surprising. From
Madden's had a quick hook with some of these,
but
guys,
that's weird,
think,
though. Like that was just,
especially on the first day of a doubleheader.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like you have a bullpen that's about to be ridden into the ground with all these upcoming games and whatever, and like. I don't know.
This on the one that I did by myself where, you know, I at some point, because I was speaking specifically on that Chatwood start against Atlanta, like at some point you got to let these guys just wear it if they got to wear it. And, you know, I think it was going to be that way, although they do have the off day tomorrow. I think it was going to be that way with Darvish if he wasn't able to settle down, where it was like, look, you're going to have to throw 100 pitches one way or the other. We'll see how far that gets us, but we can't, you know, just dip out in the second inning here, you know, every time people are getting in trouble. But, yeah, the Joe's going to Joe. So
Steve Cizek here, Corey, is on pace. You ready for this? He's on pace for 84 innings. So last year he had 44 innings. He's literally on pace for twice as many innings this year.
We're going to need, like, a bullpen rest period at some point where, you know, we're just not using those big guys. Some of these other guys, the Justin Hancocks of the world, are going to have to give the guys a rest.
At least at some point, right? I mean, this is going to be insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then before I forget here, because it's also on my mind too, can I give my quote of the series?
Yes.
Okay. So.
You had my permission.
Oh, well, thank you. So I think the theme of this year has been about just like maturity as hitters, right? So Madden was in response to being asked about Javi Baez, but Baez was struggling, as we know, over the last, I think, 7 to 10 games. He said, quote, "I'm not making excuses for my guys, not at all. I'm just being honest. They're not at their hitting maturity yet. They're not, and they're going to be. It takes time, and it takes patience, and it takes trial and error, and it takes bad moments to arrive at that point. For the most part, they're all still in that." And I look at the standings here, and they're 6 games above 500. They are World Series champions. The average age is good for second lowest in Major League Baseball as a positional core. And it's just a nice, gentle reminder of how successful they've been and how much of a high ceiling they continue to have. So we look at, like, Addison Russell. We look at Javi Baez. We look at Ian Happ. We look at Schwarber. There's these natural ebbs and flows of the season, and we look at Addison Russell. And just briefly, because I could make this the Addison Russell episode if we wanted to, but I'm not going to because there's so many other important topics. But Addie's WOBA right now is 319. He's been worth over one win. He's on pace for 4.5 wins again this year. That's top five in Major League Baseball for shortstops. I know the Manny Machado stuff is coming up, but, like, at some point, we have to recognize that, you know, when Addison's playing well, he's playing well. And he gets a lot of scrutiny. I understand it, especially for the arm issues, which have been better this year. But overall, the totality of this entire core, and I think it was Michael Cerami, or maybe it was Brett from Bleacher Nation, but there's 80 players right now, Corey, in Major League Baseball that have at least one WAR, right? The Cubs have 8 of those right now, yeah. I believe. I think that's what the stat was. That's insane. That is absolutely insane. So I kind of want to steer it before we go into this Darvish portion here, but I want to steer in just like, as like I'm reminded consistently how young this team is. And after that first game, the doubleheader, I was pissed, guys. I was like, oh, my God. Like, if they lose this doubleheader and, you know, Darvish comes out on Sunday and pitches like crap, this is going to be one of those podcasts again, like, where, you know, it's not going to be good. This is just a nice reminder that this team has a high ceiling. They continue to play, for the most part, good baseball. But they're going to have these little tiny glitches, and it's natural. That's just the way these teams work, these young teams.
Well, so I think that that Madden quote was like a couple days late, because I sort of ranted on this solo. I even listed off all of the ages of everybody under Rizzo, basically, right?
Yeah.
And I think that quote really encapsulates what I was saying, where it's just like, look, there's going to be inconsistencies because these guys are not – this isn't a lineup of full-fledged, like, established, professional, like, you know, big-time MLB players. And just because we have these memories of these guys in these big moments and helping the team win a World Series doesn't mean that, you know, they're, like, settled in.
Exactly.
Who they're going to be. So I think that Madden quote, you know, really encapsulates that thinking. And, you know, it you hope that, as we saw in this Red Series, the sloppiness or the inconsistencies are showing themselves to a lesser degree than the other side of things, right? Which is what happens this weekend. 75% of the weekend looks fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
25% was not great. And, you know, that's okay, and it's going to happen from time to time. But yeah, this team has plenty of guys that, you know, are still sort of finding who they are and you know, coming into their own, and you're going to have runs. This Ian Happ weekend is a perfect encapsulation of that, where he is the roller coaster he has been on this year has some of the highest highs and the lowest lows probably of anybody in the league.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you got a 23-year-old playing in his second year at the big leagues. Like, it just is going to come and go. But yeah, I think let's transition to, I'll read my quote of the series, because then it'll get us on the topic of, I guess, Rizzo a little bit, because it's his quote, but also Darvish.
Yeah.
So Rizzo saying today he went over to the mound and discussed things with you, Darvish, and it was after he had walked the pitcher, and Rizzo says this: he just walked the pitcher. He's walked the pitcher a couple times, referring to earlier in the year. He was pissed. I've gotten to know him. You just go over and calm him down a bit. I said, don't worry. We'll score some runs for you.
And Captain, you know, oh, Captain.
Yes, that's basically where I was going with this, is that, so, you know, one, this is an example of, because I talked a little bit about this, I think on the last one as well, when I read the quotes from Tommy Hotovoy about the process that they're going through with you, Darvish, and working with this the analytics team, the front office team, the coaching staff, the catchers, to keep taking steps and find exactly what that formula is for you, Darvish. But this is another one of those examples. Like, he's new to these players, and they develop relationships. And I just really liked this quote because, of course, you know, the results bear out, right? He did settle down for the rest of the game. And obviously, you know, when Rizzo's able to do this, it's like, oh, well, this is great. Like, Rizzo calmed him down. He ended up having a great start. Like, this sounds great. So, of course. But it's also just, it's just good to see that, you know, Rizzo is thinking, you know what, like, they're developing a relationship. They're developing that chemistry. And, you know, you'd like to get the sense that when Rizzo does this, Darvish is like, you know what, like, this is my guy, these are my teams, like, okay, you know, like, sure, Anthony, like, I'm with you, I believe what you're saying, and now I have a little bit more confidence to, you know, keep doing what I'm doing. So it was just something that you just like to see. And, you know, obviously it's sort of a common, I don't know if I want to call it it's not a joke. I'm not really sure what you would call it, but, you know, just to make Rizzo the captain, that he's the de facto captain of this team. And it's just one of those moments. And, you know, we've seen him do stuff in the past. Obviously, you know, he's at the forefront of the scrum in the earlier game on Saturday. So, you know, just always good to hear those moments where, you know, Rizzo is, you know, doing his duties as the essential leader of this team.
Especially when he's struggling, too. You know,
yes,
like, that's the thing. Like,
yeah,
it's easy to be vocal and come out in support of everything when things are going well. For Rizzo, he's been
Which is why Chris Bryant is, you know, so loud and demonstrative with his.
There's a reason why, there, right? Corey. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But that's the. This goes to show you, like Rizzo gets it. There's some players in the league that just naturally get it, and Rizzo is one of the guys there. And it's funny because I still think it's just like weird dichotomy in baseball fandom. Like, if you like stats and numbers, you're not allowed to like team chemistry or whatever. I always mention this
stuff like that.
I hate that. We mentioned this so many times, but I'm a big team chemistry guy. I really am. I think it translates to wins, and I think this is a perfect example where a player recognizes that his teammate is down. He goes over. He boosts him up. What does Darvish do, Corey? He has arguably his best performance of the year. So this is what I'm talking about. And it goes into like making successful adjustments too. Like Brandon Morrow pumping up CJ Edwards. And now CJ Edwards, give or take a few of his recent starts, has been really dominant this year. So that's what I'm talking about. And Jed Hoyer said it best here, Corey. Like, there's no C on Rizzo's jersey, but everyone knows it. Like,
right.
Like that's the guy. And it's funny too, because what is Rizzo's like 28. So again, it goes back to the point of just how young this team is.
I mentioned this on the show the other day, but I think it was the Chatwood start last week against the Braves, he was the oldest person in the lineup. There was no Zobrist, and so he was 28, and everybody else was either 26, I think Bryant is, or younger. Mm-hmm. So,
And then Darvish,
but Rizzo's the captain. I mean, whether they, you know, I think they've said Jed and Theo are like, we don't do that. We're not going to give anybody this.
Rizzo's
the captain of this team, and it is important to see that stuff, you know. And again, like, not to act like this conversation at the mound was like the biggest thing ever, right? But it's always just good to see that someone out there is the, you know, quote unquote field general. Like, he is paying attention to not only what is happening from a baseball perspective, but a personal perspective, which is something that Madden and this front office and this organization have put a very high priority on, in getting higher character guys and not disregarding the psychological and mental aspects of sports in general and the game of baseball, that some of this stuff is mental. And again, as they develop that chemistry, you know, Darvish is going to build that confidence in this group, and he is going to, you know, understand these little intricacies. And when somebody says, you know, if Javi goes up to him and says, hey, get a ground ball, Addy and I will turn it for you, like, you're going to develop that, and Darvish is going to develop that confidence, like, you know what, he's right, like, I'm going to do this, and these guys are going to back me up. So it's just, you know, one of those little instances that's good to see. Because again, and I said this when we were talking about Darvish the last time, because the last time, Brendan, you know, you missed the opportunity to talk about his cramp start, right, and how everybody was jumping on Darvish, even though he's not the manager and doesn't decide when he comes out of games. But it's just good to, you know, have a different result here and be able to talk about that and, you know, focus on sort of a different direction of this. And I mentioned this the last time that, you know, we have a lot more Darvish starts in the future than we do in the past, right? Like, a lot more, okay, if you're going to project him to, like, finish out these 6 years with the Cubs. So this stuff is going to come. And I love it, too, just especially because it does come on the heels of, that was the quote that I read the last time about. It was Tommy Hotovoy talking about how he could really feel the stuff with Darvish coming together. It's a process, and they're working, you know, to get the sequencing with him better and his relationship with Wilson better, et cetera, his preparation better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's going to take time. And, you know, these personal relationships with the players are another thing that takes time. But I think the patience is worth it, right?
Did you see the celebration?
The first 2 months of 6 years.
Yeah.
So, like, let's let them take their time. They'll come into a groove. And, you know, I don't know if Darvish is going to be winning a Cy Young at the end of the year, but just give it time, all right? Like, let's let them get in their groove. I really genuinely believe that that will happen. And, you know, hopefully we're the last 10 innings he's pitched have been very good, so let's just keep trying to build on that.
Yeah, what I was saying, too, is when he came off the mound, to finish his outing. Like, the entire dugout picked him up. Mike Borzello, everyone. And those are the players and his and the coaches that work with him on a daily basis, right? Right? And you were saying that in the last podcast, how he has Jim Hickey to go to for mechanics, and he has Borzello to go to for pitch sequencing and strategy, and he has his catchers, and he has his whole staff that he can go to. And it's a learning curve. And
yeah,
for Darvish, too, like, you got to give him credit, man. I know the mentality and the mental weakness has been brought up, but this is a guy who's dominated Major League Baseball in a foreign country for him, and he's done a good job. And it's difficult to communicate not just about what to do on the mound in general, but to work with so many different people and to be able to execute a game plan. It's hard for even the most talented pitchers. John Lester had his struggles when he first came over to the Cubs. When he was signed, he eventually calmed down. It took even a while for Kyle Hendricks to buy into Borzello's plan in 2015 or 2016. So this is not like a new thing for Cubs pitchers and these coaching staffs. This is a common thing. It takes an adjustment period, and communicating on the baseball field is extremely hard. So I think Rizzo going up to him and Darvish finally getting his game plan executed, and I mentioned this today, but he had 20% of his fastballs whiffed against. That's an insane number, Corey. The average in Major League Baseball is like 5 to 6%. Mm-hmm. So one, that tells me that he's sequencing really well, he's locating really well, and his fastball was just on fire today. I think his velocity ramped up as the game went along.
He definitely dialed a couple up. I know he hit, I think, 96 on a few of them. You could tell he was rearing back on a couple. But I think the most impressive thing for him today was, you know, that he does struggle in that first inning and, you know, throws a lot of pitches, has to labor a little bit through that inning, settled down, and I think he adjusted the sequencing a little bit as the game went on.
Yeah, he did. He actually did. He threw more sliders in that first inning, and he just basically said, you know what, like, you know, screw this. I'm going to go to my heat. And he basically threw, like,
I'm going to blow him away, yeah.
Good for him.
And so I thought that that was impressive. And you know, look, this isn't, like, patting him on the back for, you know, just accomplishing anything. This is a good start.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know the Reds' offense can do damage at times. And this was a good start. And for him to come out the way that he did and be able to settle down, give the team six innings, and even through six innings, only ended up throwing 94 pitches. So again, kind of like Lester, he could have, you know, if this was a playoff game or an important game down the stretch, he could have gone into that seventh inning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think to see him make that adjustment. Now, I know the faux psychologists in the Chicago sports media probably don't know what to do with this one, because they're thinking, well, if he's as mentally weak as I have guaranteed myself that he is, why didn't that first inning destroy him? My psychology degree that I don't have or have any background in, it's not lining up, Brendan.
Yeah, they were hitting a lot of backspace today after that first inning. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I know. I know some of the beat writers for some of these newspapers and stuff must have had no clue what to do with that narrative as Darvish does bounce back from that and deliver a good start. They're probably the type of people that are now sitting there going, well, it was against the Reds, so good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, moral of the story, Brendan and I don't really care for the national media in Chicago. I said, Brendan, I don't know if you listened to that part on the one that I did solo. I was like, look, if you want my honest advice, you really should just read The Athletic and nothing else.
Us too here, Corey.
Cubs
come
Insider,
on.
Bleacher there Nation, a three-part rotation, I think, is really what you need. But just because I was just like, look, Sadev does such good actual analysis on this.
We were talking about this too.
To just like literally making stuff up. But I just bring that up because this start is one of those things where, because I think you and I expressed, you especially, your disdain for the way that people were writing about him and sort of just assuming these mental and psychological breakdowns.
It's just ridiculous.
You just can't assume. You can certainly, even you and I can look at it and go, well, yeah, sure, that might be happening, but what do I'm not talking to him. I don't know. So we just bring that up because today there was adversity. What did he throw? 36 pitches in that first inning, I think it was.
Whatever. That's insane.
He's down 1-0 to, you know, an inferior team, obviously. And at the time, you're thinking, okay, obviously it's only 1-0, but you're like, we cannot split a four gamer with the Reds here like that. And so for him to be able to calm down, settle things down, you know, only give up two hits on the day. Like, I just, we have to mention it because if we're going to sit there and, you know, as Darvish is ripped apart every time he does something bad, and again, for, you know, an understandable reason, right? Like, there's a reason that there's this much talk about him and all that other stuff, and that's what happens when you sign big contracts. You sign up for that pressure. Mm. But kind of like Quintana, too, like, we have to give them their due when they do well. We just have to. If we're going to listen to everybody when Quintana does bad, wax poetic about Eloy Jimenez and, oh my God, blah, you know, all this other stuff, we have to make sure that we are giving them the proper amount of praise. I know it's the Reds, but they go out there, they do their job. And I don't think
that
we should let it.
It's not like they're a bad lineup, too. That's the thing.
Right. And it's just like, I just don't think we should let it go like, yeah, okay, great. Like, you know, they were good. Yeah, they were good. So if we're going to let them get, like, ripped apart every time, you know, they're not great for the first 5 weeks of the season, I think we ought to, you know, spend an equal amount of time giving them praise when, like, they're going out there and they're doing their job and they're getting it done.
Yeah. Like I said, I think for me, and just to kind of, like, come full circle here, that Jose Quintana start, that was so necessary. I really think that because out of all the pitchers on this staff, and sans Tyler Chatwood, I don't throw him into the group just because come playoff time, like, it's going to be these top four dudes. It's going to be Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, and Darvish. So the one pitcher out of the group that I was kind of concerned about was Quintana just because as players age, especially two-pitch pitchers, they got to be sharp, and they have very little room for error, especially for Quintana because he doesn't get above-average whiffs. Like, a little tiny bit of a blip in his command has drastic consequences. And so I was concerned about that because it's been continuously getting worse in the last year and a half or so. But that was encouraging, man. Like, that's got to be – if I didn't pick Ian Happ for player of the series here, it would have been Quintana. So – going forward, it would be great.
It's good to see those starts where he, you know, he's not a particularly demonstrative guy, but it's good to see those starts where he kind of has like a little bit of a, you know, spring in his step, like a little
swagger out
there.
That's what I'm saying. That body language, Corey, was phenomenal.
Yeah, it's good to see because like he's one of those guys. Unfortunately, when things aren't going well, he doesn't have the best body language.
Yeah,
he kind of looks like it kind of gets him. It gets to him a little bit personally.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's good, you know, and to see when he starts where he's like, you know, like, hell yeah, like, I'm dealing tonight, like, you know, it's just good to see.
Mm-hmm. So I think that going forward, that's going to be phenomenal. But I want to preview here the Cubs series. They have the day off when you're listening to this on Monday, so they have the day off today, and then the Cleveland Indians come in town, like you said, Corey, for the first time since they lost Game 5 of the World Series, where the Cubs would go on to win the World Series. Interestingly, the man for the Indians to take the mound on that Tuesday night game at 6:05 p.m. Central Time is Trevor Bauer, 3-3.
Oh, I know. Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast, Trevor Bauer, 3-3, 2.59 ERA.
Brendan, can I ask you a trivia question?
Of course.
What is similar about Wilson Contreras and Trevor Bauer's performance in the 2016 World Series?
What is similar? I mean,
about Wilson Contreras' name and Trevor Bauer's performance in the 2016 World Series. Wilson's first name.
Wilson.
This is a softball, Brendan.
This is like late for me, Corey. And I've had, you know, it's been a long weekend. Wilson, Trevor Bauer.
I'm really hoping that like a lot of our listeners are like, Brendan, are you kidding right now? Because this is like a beach ball I'm throwing over the plate.
Wilson, what am I doing here?
Brendan, Wilson's first name has two L's in it. The amount of L's,
you know, I would be,
that Trevor Bauer took in the 2016
I would be
World Series.
Shocked if half of our audience got that. I'll be shocked.
That is not an easy one. I'm thinking like home runs here.
How is that not an easy one? You hate Trevor Bauer. How did you?
I mean, as I'm thinking about this, I am kind of embarrassed now. As time is going along here,
maybe people that don't hate Trevor Bauer as much as you do might not know specifically that he took two of those L's in the 2016 World Series.
You're right. I should have got that.
I personally can't say it enough that Trevor Bauer lost two of the four games for the Cleveland Indians, which is 50% of the games. So basically, he kind of shouldered losing the World Series for them.
You know what sucks though? Like he's on this year. Like,
really good.
He's been one of the better pitchers.
Well, he's one of those guys. I mean, look, he's kind of a new age pitcher in a sense, where he is willing to dig into literally every piece of data that he can to make himself better, and he gets really good results out of it.
Whew. Yeah, he's throwing, you'll see it, guys, when he takes him on Tuesday, but he's throwing this new slider. It looks like Corey Kluber's slider, just like upper 80s. It just moves like a frisbee, disgusting. But Tyler Chatwood will be on the mound for the Cubs. I can't believe I'm seeing this, but he has a 3.14 ERA, 3-3 overall record. His walk per nine is still a decimal away from 8.
Well, I asked on the solo pod that I did when I was doing the recap, because he was 2-2 in that start against the Braves, and so I was like, "Is that better than the starts with like 7 walks and 7 Ks?" I don't know. Like, I have no idea. It's either way, it's like almost always.
I was
the
same.
Say,
it's always like 50-50.
I don't know if you want both to be high, both to be low. I don't know.
Yeah. And then on that Wednesday game, a little bit later start time, 7:05 p.m. Central, we have your boy, John Lester, on the mound with his stellar 4-1 record in a 2.52 ERA. For the Indians is Plutko. He's 1-0. I thought I said Pluto for a second. I was taken away. Maybe it's Plutko. You know, we can't go one pod without me mispronunciating someone's name. He's 1-0, 3.68 ERA. This is a fast series here, only a 2-game series, so they'll play the Giants the upcoming weekend, but always fun to see the Indians come back in town. We always have these memories, right? This weird memory about a year and a half ago when the Cubs won the World Series, so it's always fun to be reminded. I know you have a field day with this, Corey, with social media, but isn't there like an umbrella-type promotion or whatever?
Yeah. So the Cubs being a little cheeky here, Yeah, I would be shocked if this were a coincidence. But I believe it's the Tuesday game on May 22nd at Wrigley Field. You can get a Chicago Cubs umbrella that's shaped like a Cubs hat, which I wasn't really sure is the best idea because it has like a brim, which I was looking at and I'm like, I kind of feel like that's just going to catch a lot of water. But I don't design umbrellas.
Does the brim like angle up or whatever? Do you want umbrellas to angle down, don't you?
Brendan, you and I live in LA. We have no use for an umbrella.
70
so
degrees tomorrow,
sort of a,
sunny skies.
Yeah, it's just sort of a pointless conversation for you and I in particular. But yeah, they're giving away an umbrella on Tuesday's game, which, again, in case anybody doesn't remember, I think is a veiled reference or not so subtle reference to the rain delay that occurs in Game 7 of the World Series. Of course, Jason Hayward gives the famous weight room speech in the locker room.
His biggest contribution
yada,
to date.
Yada, yada, yada. The Cubs go on and win the World
Series.
You know
what would be great, Corey? If they like made the promotion, let's see if you can get this one, for like the first 1,700 fans get it. Do you get it?
1,700.
Yeah, let's see if you.
Well, first of all, that's way too small of a number.
Well, it would have been funny. It's not too small. I mean, like,
if promotions are usually like 10,000, is 17
okay.
minutes how long the delay
was? Yeah,
it was
17 minutes.
Okay.
So yeah, like you know, hey Cubs, if you're listening, I can be your promotion guy. That's brilliant. I think actually.
That's a strange thing to remember because that's one of those things like obviously, you know, you guys remember I was at the game, but I'm sure everybody's literally feeling the same way. You could have asked me, I would have been like, that delay could have been 5 hours long. And I wouldn't have had any idea. I was like basically blacked out from a just total nerve stress standpoint at that point. It felt like forever, you know,
yeah.
Just like reliving that Rajai Davis home run, thinking like who's left in the bullpen, like what's
going on
here?
I'm actually
a
little nauseous thinking about it. I'm not going to lie. That's terrible.
Well, and that was it. I mean, that's got to be the strangest phenomenon. I mean, because you're sitting there thinking like, okay, so they're going to come back and we're like basically 6 outs from something happening here. So, you know, like, buckle up, everybody. Like, this is going to come back and be very short and potentially very, very serious, obviously. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think, obviously, the Cubs split two in Cleveland earlier in the year, so I think most of us probably got a lot of the material out of the way. I plan on reusing it. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say,
the joke is never going to get old. I mean, that's Cleveland's problem, not mine. But it'll be, you know, interesting to see. You know, I don't know if maybe the Cubs will have some, you know, particularly chosen videos before the games or, you know, things like that. I don't know if maybe they'll make any references to that. Or we could take the high road and, you know, just be the ones that won the World Series and, you know, haven't had to suffer through losing Game 7 of the World Series and not making it back since. But, again, that's Cleveland's problem, not mine.
Oof.
So, but, yeah, it's you know, and, again, you know, you've got a good team coming in only for two games, but it'll be nice to, I mean, hopefully the weather, I mean, honestly, I know we've been talking about the weather so much this year, but especially the rain out with the Braves takes away.
Well, I need to give my weather forecast here, but continue.
Well, I was just going to say that rain out with the Braves is being done on August 30th, which I think I mentioned on the solo pod, but it breaks up they needed that off day later in the year.
Oh,
yeah. It took a split stretch of, you know, probably a couple weeks each to now it's like 23 games in a row the Cubs are going to have to play.
But, Corey, did you see that end of the year schedule? I was actually looking at this out of curiosity. They spend like the remaining 3 weeks at Wrigley Field.
Yeah,
I know it's like a big deal, but like that is a huge boost. And
I was just going to say that hopefully, you know, they'll have the day off tomorrow. Hopefully they also have a day off on Thursday. So, you know, hopefully the rain and the situation with the Indians, like, let them enjoy those days off, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they're going to have to, you know, gut it out at the end of the year, you want them to not be dealing with that anymore. And it's going to catch up with them eventually. I mean, you just don't – you really do – and you can't control it, but just they've so many times been playing, like, later than they should be, you know, with that last Braves game and how long it took to delay it. You know, obviously their flight's getting moved around and they're getting into Cincinnati late. Didn't affect their performance, obviously. And these guys are major leaguers. They're used to a lot of this, but you just it's been an awful lot, and we're only at May 20th, so you just, you know, the, you know, knock on wood, I did knock on wood, don't worry about
Thank
it
you
guys know I'm superstitious as anybody, but, you know, they've been healthy and you hope that continues, but this is one of those things that's out of your control, and, you know, you just don't want stuff like this to start catching up and creating unnecessary fatigue and, you know, sickness or anything like that. So hopefully we can just play these games against the stupid Indians. And, you know, that'll be that. But
can I get my weather forecast? I want to get my weather forecast
because
I've been so good at this.
Are people going – how about this, Brendan? Are people going to need their special umbrellas on Tuesday?
Well, let me tell you, Corey. So on Tuesday, there is a 20% chance of rain, high of 61, low of 52. So it's going to be a pretty chilly day most of the night. Now, this is Chicago, so the weather forecast does change. So it looks as if they'll get this game in on Wednesday. The temperature raises 70 degrees, will be a little more humid, so the ball will be carrying out. 10% chance of rain, so not to worry. 57 as a low. The chance of umbrellas being used this series are low, but we'll see. Now, if they're in the rare case that there is a postponed game, they can make it up on Thursday. It'll be sunny. It'll be 75 degrees here. So the weather in Chicago is starting to warm up. So that is a possibility. But overall,
so
right,
Brendan,
now it looks like they'll be pretty good.
Brendan, I have a question for
sure.
you, and I don't think that you can answer this objectively.
Well, let's give it a go.
And I can provide the context afterward for anyone that may not be aware. Do you think that you are better at reading the weather or Ian Happ?
I mean, the proof's in the pudding, Corey. I just gave that weather forecast with perfection. I'm not going to lie.
Well,
like,
I'm going to point out a quick inconsistency. The Indians do play on Thursday, so you should have checked that. They can't redo the
wait,
game.
Wait, what? Hold on. When is this?
The Indians play on Thursday, not the Cubs.
Well, that's not.
Not
that,
everything revolves around the Cubs.
Well,
Brendan.
I thought it sometimes does. But you know what? That's not the weather per se. I gave the actual weather description flawlessly.
Yeah.
Got to say.
One, just for anybody that didn't see it, if you go to, I think they shared it on their Twitter. I'm sure that I know the Cubs retweeted it too. But Ian Happ, I honestly never really figured out why. But earlier this week, he was at the Weather Channel doing the weather, He did like a quick attempt at like reading the weather.
Pretty good, actually.
Forecasts for cities that were having baseball games. I thought he was fine. I had no clue why I was watching that. Like, I just came across that clip and was like, oh, okay. You know, Ian Happ's reading the weather in front of a green screen for some reason. I guess that's cool. But, yeah, so that's what that reference is about. And you know, also when Cleveland comes in, you don't have to do this because it is letting yourself envision the darkest timeline. But let me just paint this picture for you, right? So the Indians lose Game 7 of the World Series in 2016 to the Chicago Cubs, mm-hmm. which is
the Cubs
probably,
won, yeah.
I think, a season high in reminders for us, but I never have a problem with that. They lose to the Yankees in the ALDS last year. And
they were up 2-0 in that series, too.
Right, and they are a game under 500 currently in the 2018 season. So if you're curious as to what the darkest timeline from November 3rd, 2016 looks like, that's it, folks. Because
what's worse, though? Like, do you think the Dodgers fallout is worse than the Indians right, at the current moment?
I mean, it's tough to say just because the Indians obviously have the full year afterward of it not working mm-hmm. out. And, you know, I think mm-hmm. the Dodgers are dealing with a lot more this year than the Indians were last year, because obviously the Indians go on that run of consecutive wins last year.
22.
Yeah, and they look, yeah. you know, they ended up by the end of the year, I think, looking kind of like everybody expected. And then, you know, the Yankees just got them. So I don't know. But yeah, if you like to have a little fun, I mean, look, Cubs fans, we put up with an awful lot for a long time. Obviously, I think probably a lot of the people that listen to us more so than Brendan and I. So I think sometimes it's fun to relish in the failures of those around you. Everybody did it at our expense for a very long time. And I think we all know and can empathize with how close that game was in 2016. And sometimes it's fun to just take a look at what it could have been like, because it's not. And we can still go watch those highlights. That flag does still hang over Wrigley Field. The trophy is still on display in Wrigleyville. So that's not changing. So if you, you know, are looking to have a little fun, like, check out what's been going on with the Indians since, because I don't think we'd be having a great time with that, Brendan.
Yeah, and I still get to wear my World Series championship hat, shirt, jacket on a consistent basis in Los Angeles. So it's always a treat here, Corey, to always flaunt your success.
Yes, but so I think that'll do it for us. It was a successful weekend. I think I said, you know, when I was previewing it last time that you, especially in a four-gamer with a doubleheader, you never expect sweep. You can never expect sweep. Really anywhere, anytime. But I think for the Cubs to play really, really solid baseball all around in three of these four games was exactly what the doctor ordered. You get back to Wrigley Field here and try to keep it rolling. But we will talk to you after the Cubs play these two games with the Indians, ending on Wednesday night. But until then, this has been the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, any of the popular podcast apps. And if there is an app where you prefer to listen to your audio, we will try to get on there if you let us know what that is and there's something that we can do about it. Other than that, wherever you do listen to us, if you don't mind throwing us a 5-star review and a comment, letting us know why you listened to the podcast, how you found it, etc., that is always appreciated. But other than that, we thank you for listening, and we will talk to you Wednesday night. All right.